Let's move on to question number three. And as we rotate, that brings us back to candidate number one, Josh Maines. Oh, sorry about that. We will start on question number three with candidate number four, Ryan Sayers. I do apologize for that. So let's move on to question number three. For candidate Ryan Sayers, if you could alter one state-mandated sentence, what would it be?
That's a great question, Jim, and I'd have to say that that's the purview of the legislature, so it's hard for me to make that decision and make that call, because the legislature has their committees, they look at all the statistics. I'm actually on one right now at the state level where we're looking at veterans in the system, the criminal justice system and the programs and everything that's available for them. And that committee makes a recommendation to the legislature, and eventually it goes to committee and votes and to the governor's desk. So for a judge to comment on whether something is, whether a statute is fair or unfair, is a little difficult. I know that Judge Ehrman regularly in court mentions the $1,000 fine for DUIs that's a mandatory. Additionally, there's a M3 false reports that's a $1,000 mandatory fine. As for mandatory sentences, in the criminal justice system, I know of a few of them and believe that they are appropriate based on the type of case they are, the facts that go into them. But I would say that there's not a sentence that I would say needs to be changed, but maybe looking at the financial side of things as well, because some people come in and they get probation, but then they're under the burden of these fines and costs for the next decade or more. So I would say looking at the financial side is one thing. The other thing that I'd say is we have the sentencing guidelines. I know I get comments a lot about the sentences that are offered by the DA's office or plea agreements, and we're locked in on what the appropriate guidelines are for these different criminal charges. So there is some leeway that judges have, the district attorneys have, and we apply that on a daily basis, but I can't say anything that I'd specifically change. Thank you.
Question number three for candidate number one, Josh Maines. If you could alter one state-mandated sentence, what would it be?
Well, I guess I would start out with saying, while I appreciate that question and whoever posed that question, I think for a person who may become the next judge to tell the public right now that I don't want to give a certain sentence if I'm elected, I don't think it's appropriate or probably ethical for me to weigh in on exactly what mandatory penalties that I may or may not agree with. You know, I think judges should have discretion in cases. I don't know that mandatory sentences are always the right idea, because I think judges are the ones that have the case before them. They're the ones that hear all the evidence. You can't take a cookie cutter approach to the criminal justice system, and to the extent that some mandatories may do that, that I think that could become a problem. But the law is what it is. And bottom line, whoever puts on this robe and takes the bench, we have to apply the law. I mean, we have to be true to the law, whatever it might be. So whether there's a mandatory sentence involved or not, I'm going to follow the law should I become judge. Do I think that they're always, that they're always appropriate? Maybe not.
Question number three, going to candidate number two, Bill Shaw Jr. If you could alter one state-mandated sentence, what would it be?
Thank you, Jim. So there's lots of sentences that I think that I would alter that are mandatory. Both Mr. Sayers and Mr. Maines touched on it, but for people that don't understand, some of these sentences require that the judge impose a mandatory fine. It could be $1,000 or more. That means if somebody that's indigent comes in and they're convicted of some innocuous crime, the judge got to give them a huge penalty, a huge fine. They don't have any money to pay that off. Well, how does that play out? What's the practical aspect of that? That person's going to be on probation, and now our probation department's going to supervise them, which it could turn out to be years, decades. It's an endless cycle because I'm not being disrespectful to anybody, but you can't get water from a stone, you know. So to say, I've got to order this person to pay a $1,000 fine because that's what the law says, it's just not, it's not realistic. In reality, it's not a fine what this person might need. They probably need to go to some diversionary court. You're better served to say, give me the money and pay for this person to go to counseling or therapy. Church group, something, but just say, "Oh, you've got to give me $50 a month," and they don't have the means to do that. It's counterproductive. That's what's clogging up. Part of what's clogging up our system. You go into revocation court every month, and you got all these people there that can't pay their doggone money. Well, they're never going to be able to pay the money. They don't have the ability to do that. So, look, if I'm elected judge, and that's what the law requires, that's what I'll do. But I think that that's something that probably should be changed. I think legislators should review that. I don't think that it does what they anticipate it to do. Thank you.
And we will wrap up question number three with candidate number three, Adrian Peter Sipes. If you could alter one state mandated sentence, which would it be?
Thank you, Jim. The word that I'm drawn to with that question is alter, and that means to make changes. Just to be clear, it is not the job of the judge to make laws or rewrite laws. That is the job of our legislature. So, you know, through their reviews and the studies that they have done and the testimony that they receive, they come up with our laws, and they do create these mandatory sentences, mandatory fine systems. Whether or not I agree with them or I like them, you know, has no bearing on what I have to do as a judge. You know, we have to apply the law as it is written. My personal views, my policy views, they can't have any bearing on that particular decision. So, you know, when we're talking about, you know, what we do like, what we don't like, what we would change, you know, I think that is improper for a judicial candidate to comment on, with the exception of, I will say, whatever is on the books is what I'm going to apply and what I'm going to be bound by.
Moving on to question number four, and we will begin with candidate number one, Josh Maines. Previously, legislation was introduced to allow more integration of civilian groups into the legal process regarding seeking out online child predators. What is your opinion of the idea of such groups and their tactics of soliciting online predators?
Well, Jim, I think we're in the same boat as we were for this last question. A judicial candidate cannot comment on something that may come before them as a judge. And these types of matters, as they come, should I be blessed to become judge? I'm going to follow the law. Whatever the law is, that's what it's going to be. If they're allowed to, if these types of groups are allowed to exist, and if they're able to do the things that they're doing, and it's legal, obviously, you know, I'm going to apply the law, and that's the only answer I can give, is that I will be faithful and I will be true to the law. I'm not going to turn into a legislator here tonight and decide what the law is going to be.
Question number four for candidate number two, Bill Shaw Jr. Previously, legislation was introduced to allow more integration of civilian groups into the legal process regarding seeking out online child predators. What's your opinion of the idea of such groups and their tactics of soliciting online predators?
So thanks, Jim. And, you know, just to be clear, so this has been going on. It's been an issue, at least in Clearfield County, I'm sure in other counties. And the problem is, you know, these, I don't know, what are they, the 814 Pred Hunters, I think is what they call themselves. There's groups like that. They go out and do the online solicitation, and they've been filing charges, or the police have been filing charges. The problem is the charges that the police have been filing, some of those charges have specifically precluded, you know, civilians from doing it. It has to be done by the police because it includes, you know, getting into people's computers and, you know, protections that are guaranteed by the Constitution. So, you know, some of those cases have been dismissed. But look, at the end of the day, anybody, civilian or police officer, you know, civilian can file a make a complaint, a private criminal complaint, can report a crime. So I don't think that it should be any different for, you know, somebody doing that type of work. The issue is, are the charges that they file, are they consistent with the charges that are on the books that permit you know, civilians or, you know, non-police, non-law enforcement to file that type of a charge, to collect that type of an information. And if so, then, hey, there's nothing wrong with it. You know, protect our kids. That's what it's all about. Protect the children, protect kids from molesters. So I don't think anybody really has a beef from that. The bigger issue is, you know, we want to make sure that innocent people aren't being inappropriately charged by over-aggressive or inappropriate investigation. So yeah, you have to balance that. But as a general statement, hey, if it's allowed by law, let them do it.
Question number four, going to candidate number three, Adrian Peter Sipes. Previously, legislation was introduced to allow more integration of civilian groups into the legal process regarding seeking out online child predators. What is your opinion of the idea of such groups and their tactics of soliciting online predators?
Thank you, Jim. And I certainly can appreciate the sensitive nature of these cases, being a parent, being a mother myself. The issue comes back to what we've stated before. The law is what the law is. In these particular cases, with the issues that have arisen, the plain language of the law is that the victim has to be a minor, or it has to be a law enforcement individual in the course of their duties portraying themselves as a minor. So again, this goes back to the judges not being able to rewrite laws, not being able to change the laws. That is the job of our good friends in Harrisburg and in Washington if they want to make any changes to the laws as they are written. As the judge, I have to enforce what is on the books, and until there is some kind of a legislative change, that is how we have to follow the laws that are established.
And wrapping up question number four with candidate number four, Ryan Sayers. Previously, legislation was introduced to allow more integration of civilian groups into the legal process regarding seeking out online child predators. What is your opinion of the idea of such groups and their tactics of soliciting online predators?
Thank you, Jim. So what we're talking about here is Judge Ehrman's decision in a number of cases where he looked at the law where it says that either an actual minor or a law enforcement officer posing as a minor communicates with these predators. And right now, these civilian groups are not one of those two things. And that's what Judge Ehrman said in his decision. If the legislature changes the law, then obviously that is the law as judge that I would follow. That is what we have to do. As for our opinion of these groups, it's already been said, under the judicial canons of ethics, we are not allowed to discuss how we would rule on a case. We have to look at the facts and the law in each individual case and decide it right then and there. So as the statute is currently written, it's a child or a law enforcement officer, and a decision was made by Judge Ehrman. And if the statute is changed, then I will apply it as the legislature determines. And as was also stated, I think everybody in the room can agree, and everybody listening agrees, that the most important part of this is we do want to protect our children. We want to protect our communities. The The issue is we have to do it as judges within the law. And that is where I come from. That's what I do on a daily basis now as the district attorney. I look at the law and the facts and make charging decisions. And as judge, I will continue to do that. Thank you.